I know that we've probably all heard things said about words from time to time in our life, and I know when I was a young boy in school, probably grade school is when I heard it first, we heard the expression, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. You ever heard that? Jeremy, you ever hear that? Maybe I'm too old. But the old people knew that. It was a saying that young children would say, and a lot of times they said that to try to reinforce their own spirits when they had been hurt by words. But the truth of the matter is that words are very powerful. And words can cause us some real injury, and words can have a determining factor in our life, especially our sense of self-worth, our sense of well-being. Many times words have had an extreme influence in our lives and in our hearts. So I'd like to talk about this phrase or these words I put on the board. Who said what? You know, it's important many times to know who said something. I've heard that there was once a commencement exercise for a graduating class, and a very prominent, distinguished person was asked to come and speak at that commencement exercise. And when they stood up, everyone was expecting maybe an eloquent speech, or maybe something that would be real inspiring, invigorating, and maybe somewhat lengthy. And the speaker came to the desk and basically got his, I'm sure there was introduction and all, quite the fanfare, because he was a not only a nationally but internationally well-known person. And he came to the microphone and he said, "Never, never, never give up." And he sat down. Anybody know who said that? That's correct. Winston Churchill said that. So you can imagine the people that had went to the effort of inviting him to come to speak at that commencement exercise, and this man gives up and says, "Never, never, never give up." And he says five words and sits down. Now, I'm sure there was somebody that was disappointed, but you know, that has went down in history as a very remarkable commencement speech. All right? So it's good to know who said what. And it can be very impactful to us in our everyday lives. For someone that had that kind of recognition, now, if I went to speak at the commencement exercise of the Jasper High School and I said, "Never, never, never give up," and sat down, there would be people, I'm real sure that there would be somebody that would come to me later and say, "Is that all you had to say?" But you know, there was something that went with what Winston Churchill said. He had a reputation. And he had a reputation for tenacity and expertise. And people knew some of the stories of his life and why he came to be known for the caliber of person he was. And for him to say that, it was very, very powerful. All right. I don't know what it would have been like to be at that commencement exercise or to experience that point in history, but now we look on and think that was an outstanding, inspirational moment for those young people's lives. So I'd like to go to the scripture and look at some verses of some things that was said. I'd like to go to over in the very beginning of the scripture, if you have your Bibles, and notice in the second verse of the Bible, it says, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said," "Let there be." God said, "Let there be," and He said that multiple times in the story of creation, and every time He said, "Let there be," and whatever it was He said, it was. All right? So I refer us to this for us to help get a hold of the magnitude of the power of words. No one on this earth will ever have the power of words that God has. But when God speaks, everything moves to that position. All right? So the words of God are the most powerful words that's ever spoken. And I believe you would have to agree with me on that. The God of heaven, the God of creation, when He said, "Let there be," it was. And so I want us to recognize that because we are made in God's image, our words are powerful too. And when we use our words, they can be either, one verse says, therewith we, how does it go? Bless ye God and curse men. You know, people, I didn't look that verse up. It just comes to my mind. But our words are used to express and to convey power and authority. All right? Let's go to Matthew, the 27th chapter, and I want us to continue to look at the power of words. In Matthew chapter 27, I'll begin reading in verse 15. He says here, "Now that at the feast the governor was wont to release unto the people a prisoner whom they would. And they had then a notable prisoner called Barabbas." So, in Luke, he says that he was guilty of sedition and murder. So, Barabbas. I used to be fascinated going into the post office and looking at the pictures of the wanted people. You remember that? I don't know if they still do that in the post office or not. I've lived out in the rural route so long that I don't go in the post office very much. But as a boy, we would go into the post office because we only had a P.O. box in the little town I grew up in. And you go into the post office and they always had this poster and these people's pictures on the wall. And there, some of them, they might have had a reward for information leading to their apprehension and their arrest and all of that. But these were the wanted people, people that were notable criminals. And I think about, I wonder how long it was that Barabbas was in hiding. You know, I doubt very seriously that he was caught on the first offense. I think he had a reputation for being a lifetime criminal and always escaping justice. And so they finally had him in captivity. And Matthew here says that they had then a notable prisoner, and his name was Barabbas. Okay? Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto him, "Whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?" For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. So, there may have been other prisoners that they could have chosen, but I believe that Pilate here was conveying there's two extremes here. We've got a notable prisoner, somebody that has escaped justice for a long period of time, and we have someone here that's incarcerated that really shouldn't be incarcerated. I haven't found any fault in him. So we have these two extremes, and he goes to the people, the public opinion, all right? Public opinion. And he says, what would you want me to release to you? Do you want somebody that we've been looking for years maybe? That has escaped consequences of heinous acts? Some of you out there have had family members that have been impacted directly. Maybe he was had taken the life of a parent or a child or an uncle or an aunt or something like that because he got in the way of his criminal activity. And here we finally got him, and he's going to be executed because of his crimes. So what would you want me to release to you? And Pilate, he was thinking, these people, I don't know what to expect out of them, but surely they wouldn't choose somebody of Barabbas' caliber. Surely they would say, well, let Jesus go and be equitable in their thinking and all of that. Let's skip down to the 21st verse now. The governor answered and said unto them, "Whither of the twain will ye that I release unto you?" And they said, who said it? Public opinion. They said, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, "What shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ?" And they all say unto him, "Let him be crucified." And the governor said, "Why? What evil hath he done?" But they cried out the more, saying, "Let him be crucified." Public opinion chose evil over good. And public opinion said, punish the good. Now, I realize that Christ had to die for our sins in some way, but I just want us to focus on the power of public opinion right now. And we live in a society today that many times the power of public opinion doesn't necessarily choose the good or the right. But it's very powerful still yet. And who said it means that, I wonder how many people were there that said, "Barabbas, crucify Barabbas and turn Jesus free." I wonder how many said that. I'm guessing that there were some, at least his disciples. I have to think that there was probably at least 120, because 120 were all in one accord in one place up until the day of Pentecost. So 120. But we don't have any record of somebody saying, "No, don't crucify Jesus. Turn Jesus free." We don't have any record of that. But the sway of public opinion was, turn Barabbas free and crucify Jesus. So today, many times we feel like we're just a very small minority and we say, that's not right. It shouldn't be going on. But public opinion says, that's what we ought to do. That's what we ought to embrace. This is what we ought to accept. And you can't We can't allow the power of public opinion to cause us to adjust our values. All right? Just because the power of the public... What do we do today to find out what the public opinion is? The voice? We have elections, don't we? We have elections and we vote in different people for different offices. And we have all these polling plate. You know, you get this call and they want to ask you myriads of questions. And they're collecting data and information, and then they publish that. Well, the public says this. Or the public opinion is that they don't like the current president, or they don't like the, you know, we've been getting these things in the mail about the incumbents and the ones that are proposed to be elected, and all of this stuff. We get this propaganda in the mail, and it's, oh, if you don't vote, this is going to happen, or if you vote, vote this way. You know, they're trying to sway public opinion. And the public opinion voice is powerful. And we depend on that in our United States of America. But it is not something that always, no matter how powerful it is, it's not something that always chooses the things that's godly. Unfortunately. But it's still very powerful. And we have to contend with it. And it, unfortunately, when public opinion that has so much power chooses things, sometimes it defines and shapes our lives in ways that's out of our control. But it's a reality. Who said what? And many times, the public opinion says things that we can't support. All right? I'd like to go now to Matthew, the 11th chapter, and notice a passage here in the story of Jesus. In Matthew chapter 11 and verse 25, Jesus here has been answering the disciples of John when they came and asked him questions about his identity. Jesus has been talking to the Pharisees. And at the end of the chapter in verse 25, it says, "At this time, Jesus answered and said." So who is talking? Jesus is talking. And now I want us to read what he said and see how it impacts us. He says, "I thank thee, O Father, Lord of heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent and hast revealed them unto babes. Even so, Father, for so it seemeth good in thy sight. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him." And then he says something that is so powerful. "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Is there anybody here that doesn't impact? No. That has impacted every one of us. Who said it? Jesus did. What did he say? He said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor." You got troubles, you got problems, you got uproar in your life, you got things that are distressful, things that are cause you to be burdened down. He says, "Bring them to me." He says, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." What kind of rest? Being able to sleep at night? Yes. But a peace in my heart? I bring a bunch of baggage to the Lord, and He gives me a new heart, a clean heart, one that I can be proud of, if you want to say it that way. One that's acceptable before God. How do we get that? Because we brought our baggage to the Lord. Who said it? Jesus said it. What did he say? He said, bring your garbage to me and I'll give you rest. He says, take my yoke upon you. Take the responsibility of being a Christian upon you and learn of me. Apply yourself to gaining more understanding of who I am. He says, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest in your souls. All the turmoil and all the disruption, all of the dysfunction, all of those things, we can bring it to the Lord, and He can give us a real peace, a calmness, a contentment. He can give us happiness in the midst of turmoil in our lives. And he says, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, these are powerful words. And Jesus is the one who said it. Jesus is the one who's able to deliver. It wasn't an empty, hollow words, was it? When Winston Churchill said, never, never, never give up, it wasn't empty. It wasn't hollow. There were people that knew that he had a reputation of not giving up. Is that right? So when Jesus says, if you bring your troubles and your distress and all of your confusion and everything, if you bring it to me, what's he going to do for us? I'll give you rest. You'll find that my burden is easy. And my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You'll find that life is worth living if you'll bring your troubles to me. Jesus said it. And as another saying says, I believe it and that settles it. So Lord, help us to get a hold of the words of Jesus today. More than the words of Winston Churchill. More than the words of some other world-renowned speaker or leader of any sort, help us to get a hold of the words of Jesus today. So I'd like to take our thought a little bit further, and I want to ask us a question, or two, or three. It's important, I believe, to note in our lives who said what, because it can dramatically impact us. Sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. So I'd like for us to stop and think this morning for just a little bit about things that specific people can or can't say and get away with saying it. You just stop and think about the things that it's possible for other people, specific people, to say. And they can get away. Here's what I mean by get away with it. They don't suffer any repercussion or people thinking there's something wrong with them or looking at them strange or something like that. You know, I've worked with men in a shop environment all of my working life, or most all of my working life. And, you know, men can say things to one another in a work environment that it probably wouldn't be very wise for them to say to their neighbors. Just because there's a level of comradeship that happens and people build relationships on the job, and sometimes they can say critical things to one another. It's not always this way, but I worked in an environment more than once where men would say things to one another that sounded kind of mean, and they were really joking around with one another. things like you're ugly and your mama dresses you funny. You know, I've seen guys that I wasn't involved on either end. I didn't say it, and it wasn't said to me. But these two fellows got along just fine. But you couldn't say that to everybody, could you? It wouldn't be very wise, for one thing, and then it might really cause a disturbance. I think about our relationships with one another, whether it's here at the chapel or on our job or in our homes between husbands and wives, or maybe between parents and children. Maybe it's children that live at home, and maybe it's children that are mature. And I want us to think a little bit about the things that you can and can't get away with saying to one another. And I wonder sometimes if the comments that we say to others and they seem to accept, I wonder what would happen if that comment was made to us. So stop and think not only about what you can get away with, but the things that you can't say to those people. You know, you may have taken it. You may have accepted it. You may have worked with it. When people have said things to you that were not very becoming or very appropriate. And if we're the ones that have said things to other people that may have been critical of who they were, or what they were, or what their conduct was, or something like that, I want us to ask ourselves, would we want that said back to us? How would we respond? It's important for us to know who said what. You know, if you got more than one child, and at some words along in their lives, they're going to come and tell their sibling, Mama said, Daddy said. And they're using what Mama or Daddy said to put some pressure on their sibling to do something. Or not do something. Mama said, if you do that one more time, we're going to have to, we can't play this anymore. Or Daddy said, you know, if you don't come and help me, if you don't give me a ride on your, Mama said you were supposed to give me a ride on your bicycle. And I'm too little to pedal myself, so you have to give me a ride. You know, those things can be very powerful in our lives. I want to go to Proverbs now. I want us to be thinking about the things that others say to us and what we say to others. I'd like to go to Proverbs, the 25th chapter, and notice a very common scripture, probably a passage that we've probably all read in our lives. Beginning at verse 9 here in Proverbs 25, it says, debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another. One of the things I believe the writer here is telling us is, if there is something that you need to communicate, talk to him yourself. All right? Sometimes that takes a lot of courage, but talk to them yourself. Don't send an ambassador or a representative. If you have a problem with your neighbor, talk to your neighbor himself. He says here, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thy infamy turn not away. You know, there's nothing like the confusion that's created when we have a representative doing something that we ought to do ourselves. He says, lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thy infamy turn not away. And then verse 11, he says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. As an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, so is a wise reprover upon an obedient ear. You know, the wisest reproof on a disobedient ear doesn't do much good. An unwise reproof to an obedient ear is not very beneficial either. But the combination of wise reproof and an obedient ear is a marvelous transformation. It's very beneficial. And a word fitly spoken is like pictures, is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. You know, the right word spoken by the right person at the right time is a beautiful picture, isn't it? Have you ever had someone say something encouraging to you at the right time? I'm going to tell you, it can really lift your spirits. And when someone says the right word at the right time, even on temporal things, it can be very beneficial. Yesterday, I was traveling down the highway, getting close to my destination, and my phone rings. I pick up the phone, and the brother on the phone said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Well, I'm coming to your gathering, your event." And he said, "Well, where are you on the road?" And I said, "Well, I'm mile marker 159 or 158. He says, "You need to get off." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Get off," and he described, and the exit I need to get off was 160. And he called me, and I was passing 159 mile marker. So when I figured out where I need to get off, I got off at 160, and he said, "Okay, here's the deal." He said, "They've got construction work up here," and he said, "Traffic is backed up. But," he said, "if you'll get off," and he gave me some directions, "and we'll cross the interstate and take the outer road, and we end up at our destination." And, you know, when I got up there and I was crossing the interstate, all of those people that I'd been behind, they were stopped in the interstate. And when I went by, you could see their wheels were just barely turning. I probably could have got out and walked as fast as those cars was going. So it was really good that he called me at the time that he did. 1 mile. If he'd have been a mile later, I'd been caught. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pictures of silver. You see how important it is for us to say the right words? It was important that he called at that time. You know, our words are powerful and can be quoted in context, out of context, misquoted, and misunderstood, and hopefully they can be understood too. And a lot of times we hear what we expect a person to say. Have you ever noticed that? If somebody is talking, we think we know what they're saying, and we can't even hear them. You know that happens sometimes? And sometimes we don't hear because who's doing the talking. And we don't hear what it's all about because of who it is. And this brings us to the realization of the value of a word fitly spoken. And I would like to say that every one of us here, I really believe this, that every one of us here this morning has a real desire to say the right thing at the right time, at the right place. I don't think anybody here has the intent of just causing turmoil with our words. But Lord, help us to know how to do that, because it's a challenge. It's a challenge. I've had those misnomers in my life that before the words got out of my mouth, I knew it was a wrong place, it was a wrong time, and I was saying it to the wrong person. You ever had those moments? I have. I'm just as human as anybody else. And there's other times that because of people's reaction down the road, it's obvious that I said the wrong thing at the wrong time to the wrong person. And I didn't realize it. So there are times that we know it at the moment, and there's times that we don't. But I don't believe the Lord wants us to just all be quiet. Otherwise, He wouldn't be able to speak to us at all. The Lord says that He chose by the foolishness of preaching to spread the gospel. And sometimes that feels like I'm a pretty hopeless excuse for trying to share something that will help us in our life. I want to try to help us today with the help of the Lord. Realize the power of words and the value of the right word spoken at the right place in the right time. I'd like to turn to Psalms 141 and notice what the psalmist says here. In Psalms 141, in verse 1 beginning, he says, "Lord, I cry unto thee, make haste unto me, give ear unto my voice when I cry unto thee." Sounds desperate, doesn't it? He said, "Let my prayer be set forth before thee as incense, and the lifting up of my hands as the evening sacrifice." This is a psalm of David, and according to one commentator, they felt like David was in a position where he wasn't able to participate in the temple worship. So he was saying here, "Lord, let my prayer be accepted like You would accept incense." Or would it be a substitute for incense? "And let my lifting up of my hands and self-dedication to You, let it be something that's a substitute for an offering of oblation or praise." And he says, "Lord, he started out by saying he's crying. He said, "Make haste and hear me, Lord. Help me out here." In verse 3 is what he's really desirous for. He says, "Set a watch, O Lord, before my mouth. Keep the door of my lips." Lord, help us to set a watch on our mouth. Help us, Lord, to keep the door of my lips. Lord, I don't want to offend one of Your people. I really don't want to be offensive, period. Don't you like to be liked? I do. I don't like to just be obnoxious. Men's approval, although that's not the ultimate test, but men's approval is important to us. We want other people to approve us, of us and accept us. And Lord, help me to set a guard upon my mouth and keep the door of my lips and think about, what if this person said the same thing to me? How would I react? If this person made the same observation about me that I make about them, how would that set with me? I'd like to go. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands because I'd have to raise mine too. But how many of us realize that we have not always had apples of gold and pictures of silver in our words that we have said? I know that I haven't always said that. I haven't always had, in the words that I said, in the choices and maybe the timing, I've not always had this apples of gold and pictures of silver. Although that's a good aspiration. But reality is, we're human. And because we're human, we're going to say some things that's not always palatable. And sometimes there is no way for us to know that that could be hurtful to someone else. We don't know what's going on in someone else's life. And we might not know what has impacted them in the past. And we don't know what they feel self-conscious about and what they don't feel self-conscious about. There are times that it is going to be totally beyond and escape our ability to know what kind of impact what we're saying is going to have on somebody else. You know, we could say something about someone that is going to sleep in church and not have any idea that they worked till 8 o'clock in the morning. They worked from midnight to 8 in the morning, and they still washed their eyes and changed their clothes and came to church. And we could be totally oblivious that they put in 8 hours of hard labor in the night, and they still came to church. And we could go up and say, "Well, brother, you kind of went to sleep on the preacher today, didn't you?" And not realize how bad that person wanted to be in service, that they sacrificed their sleep to come to church. You know, we can do, and that's just an illustration. So I want us to go to Galatians, the 6th chapter, and I want us to finish our thought. You know, because a lot of times we can realize the power of words, and we know who said, well, they said, Daddy said, the preacher said, the Sunday school teacher said, or Sister so-and-so said, or whatever. And it can be something that has a real major impact in our spirits and in our lives and in our hearts. And many times we find ourselves, if we've been the one that was the who, if we're the ones that said it, or if we already knew we were the ones that said something, but we didn't know exactly what we said. And when the realization comes through, we find ourselves in a place of, what do we do now? What are you going to do with it? If you said the wrong thing at the wrong time, to the wrong person in the wrong place, what are you going to do now? In Galatians, the 6th chapter, the Apostle Paul says, "Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted." So this could be applied to a multitude of things, I believe, but this morning I'd like for it to just apply to our words. Lord, if someone's overtaken in a fault, you know, our typical response to something that has been said that we can't accept, that's not appropriate, that is a violation of someone else's space or integrity or whatever. Our typical human response is, there's no call for that. And consequently, I won't ever speak to them again. Or I'll never allow my family members to be subjected to that again. If that kind of person, if that person gets up to preach, I'm leaving. If they come in the front door, I'm going out the back door. Type thing. That's not what the Apostle Paul said. If someone is overtaken in a fault, what did it say? Ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Because guess what? Your turn's coming. You're probably going to say something too. He says, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something, when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. You know, it's a real victory when we realize we have been able to put a guard on our tongue and not say the things that may have popped in our head. You know, there's a lot of times that things happen and we feel like somebody needs to know that was completely ridiculous. You know how stupid that looked. You know, we get this sudden inspiration to give somebody a piece of our mind. And you know how much of a victory it is to keep our mouth shut in times like that? He says here, let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. You know, this is why it's important for us to go speak to our neighbor ourselves and not go as emissaries for someone else. So I want to just encourage us here. If someone comes to us and says, I think you need to go talk to so-and-so. They've really offended me, or they have offended somebody else. I've been there once, at least. Somebody came to me and was sharing something that shouldn't have happened. I agreed with them. That shouldn't happen. Well, would you go talk to them? Because they won't listen to me. And I was ready to do something for the Lord. It was a good cause. So I went and talked to them. You know how that went over? Like a lead balloon. It didn't go over very well at all. In fact, what I ended up hearing was a lot of accusations toward the person that told me about the first person. And I was wishing I'd never got involved in that. And I want to challenge us today, if there's a conflict, please don't rope somebody else in. Go talk to your neighbor. Let's go work that out between you and them. You remember the other verse? It's so much better that way. And you know what happens? Is when two people can humble themselves one to another, you know what can happen? There can be a bond there. There can be a real benefit more than the rift ever caused a separation. You can have a friend for life where you thought you had an enemy. Lord, help us to know how to and have the courage. This is not for little shrimpy people. This is for courageous soldiers of the cross. Go on and read a little more here. He says, every man that shall bear his He says, for every man shall bear his own burden. We're all going to have to bear the responsibility of our words, of who said and what we said. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. For he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. We have to remind ourselves that our objective is to have right words at the right time and have those apples of gold in pictures of silver. That's what our objective, that's what our goal is. Lord, help us to work towards that. And as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. Lord, help us to cultivate brotherhood. Help us to give the opportunities for spiritual growth. Help us to have one another's good in mind when we are communicating to one another. And Lord, help us to realize the impact of our words, realizing who said what can be very important and crucial in our lives. So I want us to be encouraged today to ask the Lord to help us put a guard upon our mouth and on our lips. Help us, Lord, to know how to gain the upper hand when it comes to speaking our mind. And help us, Lord, to be willing to give one another the latitude that we need to give, to allow someone say something without just totally throwing them overboard. We may have to go to them like a neighbor and say, brother, you know what you said was, I don't know if that's what you meant or not, but it was kind of painful. Lord, help us to know how to approach our neighbor like that, or something of that nature. Help us to know how to communicate effectively. I desire your prayers. I know that I need to have a guard upon my lips too. So Lord, help us all today. You pray for me.